Hello Fostem, and welcome to my talk on firmware settings and menus. I'm going to give an introduction to the topic, talk about the history of user interfaces that we have in firmware, look at the modern interfaces that we now have, and then later on propose some ideas that I have for open source firmware, things that we can add there or that we can explore. So first for the introduction, in my day job, am mainly working on the web, and I'm an application developer there. I design user interfaces and implement them. And in my free time, on the other hand, I also work in the firmware space, deal with operating systems, sometimes contribute to software distributions, or do a bit of reverse engineering. And at some point, I started Fjedka, the firmware editor project. So Fjedka is a graphical application that you can install on your desktop. If you're already curious, you're welcome to just visit the website, or maybe do it later. And for now, I would just like to tell you that it currently has the ability to analyze a firmware image that you give it. That is mainly for UEFI images that you have in your laptop, for example. And then you can see what's actually inside of it. So the project is going to continue, and I'm going to add more and more features, always looking for more contributions. And we will get back to this here during the talk later. So first, a few words on user interfaces, because it turns out that they are very, very critical. For example, the Navy, you might have seen this article here. They at some point decided to switch their interfaces in their fleet to using touchscreens. However, they were facing problems there, and it turned out that the input devices that they had were way much too complex for the people to use, so they were asking to switch back to manual interfaces. And this here is, an abstract figure of what these interfaces look like there. So unlike the laptops that we have today, you may see a certain subset of that here in the picture. You have a bunch more inputs, and you also have a second screen there, and it might even be necessary to have multiple people to operate this. So as you can imagine, a ship or maybe a submarine is a bit more complicated than, you know, working on a fancy laptop. But let's talk about where we are coming from in open source firmware. So the early firmware actually started with one thing that we know as the so-called BIOS. And the BIOS came from IBM, though at some point a company named Phoenix Technologies, they looked at it and implemented their own, commercial clone of that. And that sparked the idea of the IBM compatible PC. Then later on, and during the 90s, the open firmware standard evolved, also known as IEEE 1275, which was the first non-proprietary boot firmware. So it was a means of abstracting devices. They looked a lot at ways to express different data structures, and then eventually provided a user interface, which was just a fourth interpreter. And then later on, starting in the 2000s, there came a new standard, which we now know as UEFI, but back then it was just EFI. And then people already started to have more and more abstract ideas to not only interface in a more machine way, but also for humans. And they called that the human interface infrastructure. They standardized protocols for talking to the underlying firmware, and they defined data structures for building forms, for example. And we will also come back to this later. So this was the open firmware interfaces. They had already the view that, there will eventually be, real people that will be the users that are interfacing with the firmware, right? So people like you and me sitting in front of the machine. Then on the other hand, there will be the operating system, which also needs to be able to talk to and exchange with the firmware. And then, of course, you have the underlying devices that you eventually need to control with the various expansion buses. So back then, of course, it wasn't like the PCIe stuff that we have today, but it was already the first devices. So yeah, this here, if you look at the picture, it's actually a drawing from back then. It's a bit more pixelish, and well, the screen also looks a bit different today, but at large, the abstract ideas of these devices are still very much the same. So this is what the fourth interpreter looked like. And well, it still does today, because this here is a picture I took from a website that is the MorphOS project. And if you want to look at that or see it in action even, there is also a video that someone took, which is the address that I provide here below. Well, and then at some point, people thought, hey, let's make it a bit more graphical and a bit more appealing. And that is what Intel did and called it the Visual BIOS. And people were, well, some people were very much amazed, like, hey, what you're doing there, I haven't even installed my full operating system. That is quite amazing. So if you look at this photo here on the screen, you see a very, very colorful interface. You see various different pictures layered together. You have what we now also call widgets, like different pieces on the screen that you can interact with. You have the various outputs there, but you also have a more modern input device, which is a mouse. So if you don't see it, there is a mouse cursor also in there. And now let's look at what we have today. There are what I like to call NUIs, the so-called TUIs and GUIs. The NUI, or no user interface, means that we actually don't really need to interact with the firmware on a device, or maybe not very much. So that can be appliances that are pre-provisioned that you just put somewhere, hook it up with your network, and that's it. It can be something like Google Home, for example, which you mainly just talk to later on, which is then the application interface, but you don't really need to do anything with the firmware that is running inside of there. Maybe a bit of an initial pairing step, but that's about it. Then there is the textual user interfaces. That is what many people, especially here at FOSDEM, I think, are very much used to. Then we have two sorts. There are the command line type interfaces, where you type a command and then you get some immediate feedback. Well, it can also be a bit delayed, but you get some feedback also in a textual manner. But that can also be something interactive. So that is, for example, with ncurses that we have for configuring a Linux kernel. There is a UI built for that. And then eventually we have the graphical user interfaces, which is the richest applications, if you will, that we have today. That includes web browsers, but it can also be, well, creative applications like for recording audio or video, or, you know, things like that. And now let's look at open source implementations that we have for firmware. There is Coreboot, a very famous project that is, for example, used in the Chromebooks, that is also used by System76 for their laptops, by Purism, and a few other companies now. And in Coreboot itself, we have one tool that is called NVRAM tool, which is for runtime configuration. That is used in the operating system, so running from Linux, for example. There is the NVRAM CUI, which is a payload to Coreboot, so that is still part of the firmware, and that is something that you can then launch at boot. And then a similar one is CoreInfo, which is really just to output some information to you. And eventually, some people made graphical applications, like the CoreVantage application, or a near fork of that, which is the Coreboot Configurator. We will also look at that briefly. Then we have the Linux Boot project. In Linux Boot, well, since we are in a Linux environment, of course, we have a shell that we can use. So that can be, for example, the Elva shell. That is something that we use a bit. But there are also other implementations of Linux Boot which are providing a bit of a different interface, like the Hat project, for example, which lets you check whether your firmware may have been compromised by providing you with a QR code that you can use to check against. And then we have projects like WebBoot and also the various other bootloaders in the Linux Boot distributions which give you a TUI, a textured user interface, which is interactive, so you can choose from boot media and things like that. Many people of you from the embedded space know the U-Boot project, which has an interactive command interface. So it's similar like the shell that you otherwise are used to from Linux and FreeBSD and so on, where you can type commands. But it's very much tailored to U-Boot, sometimes even narrowed down to the very specific device that you have. And there you can, very similar actually to the old open firmware stuff, say like, I don't know, show me the subsystems that I have, like MMC storage and stuff like that. And then eventually we have the Theano Core project, in which we have EDK2, the UEFI development kit, where we can build like the UEFI shell, for example. That is something that is also similar to a shell that you know from Unix systems, but you know it's its own thing, a bit different. And they also created something called the Center Browser, which is a graphical interface, not only, but it can also be used in a textual manner. And that is what we're looking at right now. So this here is what ASRock provides. This is a UEFI configuration tool, which is a fully graphical environment. This is based on the HII, the human interface infrastructure that comes from UEFI. Now let's look a bit at the features that we see there. First of all, we note that we have clickable elements, so that means we have mouse support already, but it's mostly actually simple text. That has a reason. So first of all, it's a very informative part, right? So we have information on the RAM that we have the CPU that it installed, and there can be a bunch more information to be shown, like in the different other tabs in that menu. There is subcomponent info, for example, the information on the firmware itself, its version, the vendor maybe, maybe the date, and the same for the microcode. So on Intel and AMD platforms, people are maybe used to that. You can actually patch the microcode at runtime, and that is something that the firmware can already do for you, and you can also do so later for the operating system. And then, of course, there is other more fancy features like the hardware monitor. So you can, for example, look at the fan speed in that menu. There was a QR code there, so that will give you a link to the manual or maybe the product website. And then there is, well, other info like the date and the current time. You can choose between languages, so internationalization is already built into it. And then for the settings part, that's where you can provide your own input. We can do clock adjustments, for example, that is for gamers maybe who like to overclock their systems. You can set up the boot media, like the default boot device that you want, or the order of devices to try to boot from, and configure different sources so it doesn't need to have a local storage, for example. But you can also have networks set up that you want to boot from. And in some menus, you can even do the provisioning of secure boot keys. And now also note the screenshot. It was an actual screenshot, was taken from within the UI and then stored to a USB drive. But that's not the only interface we get from EFI or UEFI. We also get a textual interface, or, well, in this sense, it's a bit more of a binary thing, or, well, here it's the hex view. In Linux, for example, in the sysfile system, we can look at the EFI variables just as we like. Now, this here, of course, is a bit of a stupid example, but I wanted to point out that there is a lot of things to interface with here. And of course, the question is, can we do something here? Can we parse this information? Can we make this a bit nicer? And I can already tell you that there are lots of different variables in EFI, which can have entirely different meanings. And sometimes, you know, you will not even find documentation on them because they are like vendor specific or something like that. And in CoreBoot, we have something similar, as I said, that's the NVRAM tool, which can dump you data from the firmware itself. So there are tables in CoreBoot, for example, and here this here is just a brief excerpt. It would then just continue, you know, with the bunch of hex values that we have there. And again, the question would be, could we make this a bit more intuitive? And yes, that is what the author of the CoreVantage tool thought, and also what Starlabs did. So I'm not exactly sure if they made an actual fork. If you look at the repository, it looks like it. But anyway, this is the CoreBoot Configurator interface, where you can change settings that you may also know from your laptops or desktop computers. So here, for example, you can turn on or off hyperthreading, or also the support for the Intel Management Engine. And another company, System76, also distributing CoreBoot firmware on their devices now. They also interface with the firmware itself from the operating system. So here we only have pure output, in a sense, but we're seeing the current version of the firmware that is being installed, that has been installed. So that means that at some point there has been, you know, some call to the firmware or a brief look at memory at least or something like that to know what version is currently installed. And well, below there, they also print the changelog. And well, I assume at least that the changelog is not from within the firmware, but it's actually an enrichment that is coming from outside. And I was thinking about this and coming up with a few more ideas that I would like to now present for the open source firmware projects that we have. And first, for the Linux Boot project, which, as I said, is mainly just a textual interface, one very simple idea were to just add a splash screen image to make it a bit more appealing. I at some point created the fb splash command that you may also know from other environments, like the BusyBox tool, for example. It also has one such command. Now, what it essentially does is it just draws an image to a screen. So with the default command that we have in Linux Boot now, you will see the Golang gopher drawn on the screen. But you can also provide your own image if you want and, you know, draw it on the full screen or something. But of course, we can also do it a bit more advanced and set like an entire frame around the textual interface that we have in the middle and keep it persistent. And that is what the FBCon Decker extension does that some people may know from Gen 2. And that is sometimes also used for, well, making the boot process a bit more appealing. But it can also decorate the TTY later on. And now let's get back to HII, or the Human Interface Infrastructure. So this document here is actually from 2003, so it's almost 20 years old now. And this here is the table from the appendix that is translating the internal forms representation, that is what IFR is short for, to HTML, which we still use in the web browsers today. And if you think about it, web browsers have evolved so much, but already back then they were thinking about ways to translate the elements from IFR to HTML. So they put a lot of effort and thought into that. And so, well, some years later, this year is from 2011, so it's a bit more than 10 years old by now. They presented again the concepts that are playing into that. And if you remember the picture earlier from the Open Firmware project, then you may also recognize a few things here. So first of all, this is about abstracting devices on the one hand side. And on the other hand, it's about interfacing with the user. And also, well, that is not exactly shown in this picture, of course, the operating system at some point. And now, if you think about it, devices have also become much, much more complex today. So that means that we also have more complex data structures. So this is maybe something that we should revisit and also get some inspiration from. So, well, we could do something as simple as just mimicking the same interface that we have from what you know as the textual thing. And, you know, just put that in the web browser, install it in the same way. If you look at this here, this is a click dummy that Thomas Krenn have on their website. It looks very much like the more old school way. But of course, we can do this in a bit more colorful manner. So let's talk briefly about user experience. And that is also thoughts that they already had in 2003. One very, very critical thing I want to remind you of again is user interfaces are critical, right? So they already wanted to encourage you to create a user interface that is really, really intuitive. That's what we call it nowadays. And back then they called it WUU, walk up and use. It means that if you look at a screen, you have the setup thing there, you should immediately understand how to use it and what it does. So there should not be a learning curve at all, ideally, and you should not need to look at external documentation. Well, and those were the bullet points accompanying that. They wanted to have a simplified interface, right? They wanted to have minimal shortcuts if necessary and things like that. And well, they also put some thought into that, which sounds a bit weird maybe looking back like 20 years, but this is what they were saying. At this time, a generic web browser is probably the most universal non-proprietary interface, which means they were already thinking about issues that may arise from having a, you know, proprietary interface or something that is not portable or anything. And thinking about it, web browsers have evolved so much nowadays, but we can fulfill this very purpose now very, very much, though I haven't really seen much of that being done, except for in a few special places. So if you look at the website today on ufi.org, they have this sketch here of how things belong together. If you build an application now, for example, a browser or a management application, so that could be a desktop application like Fiedka, you would have some protocols underneath. So in EFI, there is this config keyword handler protocol, a routing protocol for it, an access protocol, and then eventually boils down to the device, which can be the motherboard, for example.